Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is Paul Hawkesby.
And Andy Jacobs.
And this is the H&J Daily with some of the best bits of this afternoon's show. Well, obviously, the breaking news about Everton meant we had to shake things up a bit. But we still want to bring you our review of the weekend with Danny Kelly. A number of you have said to us, always put that in the podcast because I can't always listen to it.
No,
right? And people enjoy
good.
It.
Danny's
so
really
we're
great.
Very happy to do that. So our full chat, all 10 games in the Premier League, covered with Danny Kelly, who joined us. And Susie McCabe joined us, comedian, podcaster, and Celtic fan. And she had some really interesting stuff to say, not just about the brilliant derby yesterday, but also about the future of it and away fans.
Yeah, she was
very
great.
Sensible take on it. So I hope you enjoy that. Clips of the Week Pewter, we brought you as well. There was a few corkers in there. Mr. Parry at his maddest. Here it all is.
And I sighed a lot.
You did sigh a lot. Here it all is. Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, Andy.
Yes, a more late drama involving Chelsea yesterday. Yeah. And I hope the Sheffield United fans didn't leave at 2-1. I'd never do anything like that.
I know.
Oh,
That's not the kind of thing you'd ever do. One, if they did. If you are a Blades fan who said, I can't be doing with this at the end, I'm off. Did you do an Andy Jacobs? Do let us know. Talksport.com, text to 81089. Tweet TSH&J or 03717223344 if you want to join us in person.
We'll go into the game more in detail, but honestly, the idea of bringing on Badashield to shore it up, to stop, the only way Sheffield United were going to score was to lump it into the box at that stage.
Wow. And that's the way they scored.
Honestly, he's got the vertical leap of an upright piano, that bloke, really. Honestly, he missed two headers and they scored.
Oh, yeah.
What was the point of bringing him on?
I don't know, to shore things up.
Sake. Hopeless, really. But, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah. You have been the incredible sighing man. Andy's been sitting next to me preparing for the show and occasionally just goes...
Well,
and I don't have to ask him what it is.
It's so frustrating. I mean, you just can't, words can't describe how annoying it's been watching Chelsea this season.
Wow.
They've squandered. They've taken 2 points from the bottom two teams, having led 4 times in the games. They'd be level with West Ham with that game in hand. It's absolutely stupid what they've done in the last week.
Margins.
Yeah, but it's so frustrating. Mm. Anyway, I did watch a bit of the Old Firm game.
Oh, yes, tremendous match.
It was good to see Gordon Ramsay in the crowd. And apparently, he said to them that you've got to repaint the dressing room and shorten the menu in the canteen.
That's it. And then that was, of course, the cornerstone in many of his shows, wasn't it? Yeah. But it was an absolute cracker. Susie McCabe's going to join us later on. The trouble is, atmosphere-wise, is a bit like a Real Barca game. Like, one team scores, the away team score, and there's this deathly silence, isn't there?
Wasn't a great stand. It was also a good game, but it's not, you know, those teams, they were saying on breakfast this morning, you know, championship teams, really.
I mean, Rangers did ever so well to come back into that game
because
half-time they looked dead and buried. And the fact you've only got one set of fans in the ground really does amplify the fact when that set of supporters are not happy.
No.
And they gave them a proper send-off at half-time to tell them they weren't happy. But it seemed to have the desired effect because they were a different side second half. So, but now, what a cracking game that was.
I do feel for Wolves. They must have more apologies than Howard Webb.
I know.
I mean, I'm surprised they even take his calls.
Yes,
I agree with Gary O'Neill. I think that's one of the worst decisions in the history of football.
Yeah.
I mean, what on earth was the VAR thinking? What was he thinking?
Yes.
Can he not tell? Has he never played football? Did he honestly think that Fabianski would have got to that header? He wouldn't have got to that header if no one had been standing in front of him. If everybody else had left the pitch, he still wouldn't have got to that header.
No.
It's an pathetic decision.
I think really if you looked hard enough for long enough, you'd probably find a reason to chalk off every goal if you really, really tried.
It was VAR again. It's very, very worst. Yeah. Really abysmal.
Interfering.
No, it's
very hard to see it any other way. But Danny's going to be joining us very shortly for a bit of a chat reflecting on the Premier League weekend. Wind assisted. Wind was in the news this week. I don't know if you noticed, we had Storm Kathleen and Donny Iriola, the Bournemouth manager, blamed wind for the collapse at Kenilworth Road, not the fighting spirit of Luton, you understand, but the wind. The wind was key. It was in our favour in the first half. We had chances. In the second half, we couldn't play like that because of the wind. It was very good for us in the first half. Very bad in the second half. And Storm Kathleen got a mention.
Yeah, match
from
of the day, didn't it?
James Ward-Prowse for the assist.
Yes.
He said he'd never scored. Of all, you know, I would have thought that over the years, James Ward-Prowse would have scored direct from a corner, even as a kid, because he hit such a good set piece. But he never had. That was his first one, straight in the net. So a bit of wind-assisted sport. If you've got any tales, I mean, you maybe paint pictures with words. Take us back there, good and bad. Maybe if you were a keeper, beaten completely by the wind, or somebody who scored an absolute worldie because of it. Let's have some wind-assisted sports tales. TalkSport.com, text 81089, tweet TSHNJ, 03717223344. And there's been this long-standing joke about people who work at Disneyland or Euro Disney never taking the heads off because it would really freak the kids out.
Oh, yeah.
And on the Rest is Entertainment podcast, Richard Osman was telling a story of doing Children in Need and saw Pudsey having a fag.
Oh, yeah, I saw this in the paper.
The head was off, and old Pudsey was round the back, yellow suit on, head off, having a cigarette, and the magic was lost. I mean, not on Richard, who I was guessing knew that it was a bloke in a bear's costume.
Absolutely.
But what if the kids had seen him?
It's true.
Don't let the kids know. So I just wondered, the magic being lost.
Children in need of a fag.
Children in need, indeed. So if you've got tales of the magic being lost in that way, we'd love to hear them today. TalkSport.com/H&J. Text to 81089 or tweet to TSHNJ, TSHANDJ. 03717223344.
I did like this bit from Justin Allen's very good column about the sort of the championship and below.
Yes.
And he's saying that the EFL Awards this year are to be held at the Swanky, Swanky Grosvenor House Hotel.
Swanky.
I mean, where do you want them to be? The Premier Inn or B&B in Morecambe? It's ridiculous. So tabloid, they call the hotel Swanky.
Swanky, yeah.
Yeah. There you go. Why not?
Anything else?
I was reading about a very interesting piece about sommeliers, you know, people who
do wine experts
in restaurants.
Oh, yeah.
And this bloke, it was sort of lots of anecdotes from them. This bloke was talking about a guy who ordered a very, very expensive wine. He thought, oh, that's quite classy. I think that's a great thing. You know what you're going to say?
What do you put?
Coca-Cola in it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Look, it's his money, Andy.
Oh, that's amazing.
He can do what he likes,
I guess.
Yeah. Spending ages chatting to the sommelier about what's the best one to get, then tipping half a can of iron brew in it.
That's not good. Ideal, is it?
I like that, though, Andy. Maybe that's a springboard for a few more. If you've got other examples of that, that's like us with Jeff Peters going to one of the best curry houses in the whole country when we're in Leicester, and Jeff having
steak
and chips. They didn't major in steak and chips.
No, they didn't.
I mean, it was a bit shoe leathery. I mean, they made
Gareth Bale's bar look like Salt Bay.
Yeah, fine Indian.
That's the worst steak I've ever had.
Lovely, fine Indian cuisine. But there were Blakeys in it. That tells you all you need to know.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Well, all 10 Premier League games played yesterday. And it would have been this weekend. There would have been a game played tonight, but of course, because of the train strike, rail strike, etc., and the potential tube strike that was called off, Tottenham was switched to six o'clock on a Sunday to watch a match. But anyway, we're going to reflect on all of them now. And Danny Kelly is with us as always. Hi, Danny.
Hello, chaps. All good? Yeah,
not too bad, thank you. Not too bad. I'm feeling a little... I think we're a slightly more chipper than Andy is, but we'll come on to that, of course.
Well, having turned down numerous invitations to the top four, Spurs have finally decided to send back the RSVP, haven't they? We're coming.
They have, albeit on goal difference. But we'll come to that, because we are going to kick off with the mayhem that was, once again, Manchester United 2, Liverpool 2. And I left at half-time for Spurs, having watched kind of numerous attempts on goal by Liverpool, thinking this is going to come back to bite them on the bum, like the cup game. Mm. And sure enough, by the time I got to Spurs, they were 2-1 down. It was another strange old game, Danny, wasn't it?
Look, normally between me, you and Andy, we can conjure up enough comedy not to have to rely on others. But I recommend to you at this present moment the piece by Jonathan Wilson in The Guardian today about this game, in which he analyses Manchester United's anti-press and theorises that because they give teams so much space, they're freaked out by it. Mm. A bit like Spurs' high line against Chelsea in the infamous game at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, where if the opposition just so unused to having so much space. I mean, how many times did Liverpool have 3-on-2 or 4-on-3 and make the wrong decision? But you're right, bum biteage was inevitable once they missed all those chances. And United are a ludicrous team, aren't they? Their goals were fantastic in their different ways, but they didn't win the game. Liverpool had infinite space to do so and chances to do so and didn't win it either. It was a great advertisement for something. I'm not sure about it was that great advertisement for the Premier League, but it was a great advertisement for something. It was like a comedy film.
They've given 3 penalties away in 2 games, United. I mean, it's just madness. And they are not a very good team. You know, they sort of, like I said on Friday, they've got good players, but they just don't. And they only got back in that game. It was exactly like Chelsea did. Liverpool gave them a goal. They were never getting back in that game until that happened, you know. So, and then once they get a bit of momentum, they got ahead, but they couldn't maintain it.
They've conceded some ludicrous number of shots in the last month, which translated into the sort of decimal currency of XG means they should be conceding 3 goals a game. Yet they've only lost 3 times in the last 2 months, United. There's something mad going on there. And I think the coach has to take some of the responsibility here. No matter what you think your system is, if the players aren't suited to it, United haven't got the speed at the back to always be facing their own goalie. They always get back because they're playing so high up the pitch with all their defenders facing their own goal. That's why they're giving away penalties, because the players are not in positions that proper defenders should be. Don't want to get too technical, but they're just not in the right place because of the system they've been asked to play.
Yeah, 28 shots, 7 on target, of course, is the stat that's emerged in the last few hours. It was,
that's about over 80 shots in 3 games.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
Which I think is a record, isn't it? But it was absolutely nuts.
The received wisdom is that on average in the Premier League, 9 shots equals 1 goal. Mm. So they should be getting hammered in these games, but they're not.
Klopp, though, was wonderfully bitter after the game. Reminded me of myself, actually. Yeah. He said, Arsenal are a good team. If United play like today, Arsenal will win. I'm 100% sure.
Well, he's right. I mean, if you're that open against a team as good as Arsenal at the moment, you can, in the end, you will get your pants pulled down one day. You will get an absolutely shocking result, possibly in front of your own fans.
Anybody want to feel in sympathy for Casemiro, who gets a late career contract, a vast stipend, play for Manchester United, not realise he's going to be exposed at his age to a defence that can't defend and a midfield that won't support him? He just stands there directing traffic now, doesn't he, Casemiro? Bless him.
He's lucky to get a yellow at the end.
They got a point.
Fair dues.
On to Brighton 0, Arsenal 3. And I thought this was a real kind of statement performance, because Andy was, when we did the Fools panel on Friday, Andy was feeling Brighton could potentially cause an upset. He might have even gone for the draw. Did you go for the draw in the end?
I can't
or not?
Even remember.
But there was a feeling that Brighton, who hadn't lost at home since August, could be the team that could trouble Arsenal. They swept them aside like they weren't there.
They played really well.
And they did it in an interesting way as well, because, all these teams at the top are used to having the lion's share of possession. Arsenal actually only had 45% possession in this game, but still turned into an absolutely routine win for themselves. And this is all based, we keep on talking about the improvement in Kai Havertz, what Odegaard is doing, which in my mind makes him a real contender for Footballer of the Year. But essentially, this Arsenal as a team defend brilliantly.
Yeah.
I don't think they've even been behind in 2 months now. They don't even see a referee mistake, the ball goes in on someone's backside. They just don't concede, perhaps a bit later on when they've already got the game under control. And if you've got decent forward players, that is a great platform to play from. I'm sure Paul looking down the other end of the Seven Sisters Road would agree with me.
We all know the team with the best defence always wins the title.
And that's the signpost that's currently pointing towards North London.
I've been saying that for weeks. I see Arsenal are definitely going to win the title because they, you know, who's going to score a lot of goals against them? Who's going to beat them? You know, so
the only thing that could hold them back injuries, from that point of view is if one of their defenders gets a total injury, like Ben White, bless him. I presume he's recovered now and out of hospital. Is he?
Yeah.
from that facial injury he got.
I think he has.
I know it was a strong wind in Britain over the last 48 hours, but that shouldn't cause your neck to snap, should it?
He's in the next bed to Ryan Yates. I'm going to pop down and give him some grapes a little bit later on.
It hasn't escaped Chelsea fans' notice that Jorginho and Havertz are so effective for Arsenal. You know?
Yeah, Jorginho especially. Well, look, you know, he wouldn't be buying them unless he felt he could make it work. So there we are. Force him in our praise of Arsenal. It might pain myself and Danny to do that, but
you've got to call it as you see it, Paul.
They're playing brilliantly. Yeah. They are absolutely playing brilliantly at the moment. Crystal Palace 2, Manchester City 4. Again, a bit of a crazy old game with, defensive
Rodri. What a rare off game for him. And they still won 4-2.
It was like one of those Sunday morning performances when someone's got in at 4 o'clock in the morning. They've sort of turned up still finishing their kebab. It was very odd, wasn't it?
Considering that he too must be a contender for Footballer of the Year, Player of the Year.
I wonder,
you know, maybe his mind was in completely anathema to football managers going forward to bigger fish to fry later this week, live here, of course, on Talk Sport. But it wasn't a routine win. Unlike Arsenal's win at Brighton, it wasn't quite routine for Manchester City. I mean, Glasner. The only thing you can obviously say he's done at Crystal Palace so far is get a tune out of Mbeumo. So that early goal gives them something to bite on. And you're right, whereas Rodri was down, we saw Jack Grealish in one of his rare outings these days. Calves bigger than ever. And I'm starting to worry about the size of Jack's calves and whether they will probably explode like in a cartoon. Running into the penalty area, the last defender is moving in. What's going to happen? One of Jack's calves explodes. But he played well, but people will say levels, won't they?
Yeah.
Because it was only Crystal Palace and all that. But they probably did deserve. They did deserve the game.
The second half, they were brilliant.
And that's the second game running where Pep has clearly got into them at half time or worked out what's going wrong. And Villa Wednesday, and you know, straight into the second half and laying down a marker, they look a different side, City.
All we can say about them is that they're not quite in the supernatural form of this time last year.
No.
They could still very easily win the Premier League and win the Champions League. Somehow they're just not quite that team.
I mean, they were able to rest Foden for the game, get the best out of Kevin De Bruyne. So it's all... I mean, look, they could really sort of train on at the end of the season.
They're like an NBA team in the playoffs. They start to step it up. And I thought the second half they were brilliant.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Danny Kelly is with us. We're looking game by game at the Premier League weekend. We looked at the top three's performances. We move on next to those vying for Champions League. Tottenham Hotspur 3, Nottingham Forest 1. I was there last night, Danny, a strange game which Forest played very well in the first half, and had they gone 2-1 up, the atmosphere in the stadium, there's a bit of frustration among the Spurs fan, and Chris Wood had not clumped the post with that shot from 2 yards.
Chance that was.
It could have been slightly different, but as we've seen, you know, Ange changed
bear
things
in mind
at half time.
Well, Chris is in extraordinary form, isn't he?
Yeah.
And, you know, he's got a lot of goals since Nuno Espirito Santo got there. What combination of desire and physicality allows you to hit the post from that distance? I mean,
he tried to hit it too hard. He got a bit overexcited.
Yeah. But it was a turning point.
The ball was flying at him. Yeah, it was.
Yeah, and you know, Postecoglou then changes the midfield for the second time twice in recent times. He's had to take off two of the midfield three. But as he said afterwards, if you've got a deep squad, use them.
Yeah.
And Højbjerg, who gets a lot of grief from Spurs fans, particularly online these days, was the difference in the end. He ran the game a little bit.
No, he played very well.
I mean, I personally always think the table doesn't really lie. And I think Spurs, right, they are off the top three, but I think they are the best of the rest. And, you know, I'm not surprised they're fourth. They've had a very good season.
It wasn't the greatest performance yesterday. There is some frustration in watching them play, especially against teams that, that sit like that and look to hit you on the break. They, you know, they are a bit by numbers at times. They
look, they lack a bit of dynamism, don't they?
They do.
Is that the word I'm looking for?
They tippy-tap around in the centre, and then invariably the ball will be played either to Johnson or to Werner at the moment, and then we just hope that they can get beyond their marker and stick a ball in the box, or invariably there's no one waiting there because Johnson hasn't arrived at the far post yet. So there is a predictability about it, but that changed in the second half when they upped the tempo and Forrest, for whatever reason, couldn't live with it. I mean, there were some talking points. James Maddison was very lucky. I mean, it reminded me of crybaby Jim Breaks from the world of professional wrestling.
It wasn't 100% clear whether it was a punch, whether it was a slap in the stomach. It was difficult
to
see what it was.
The problem is, he's a self-fulfilling prophecy because we saw with Pakatar last week and other players have done it. He's not in his best form. He is getting frustrated when he plays, and there's players deliberately going out there to get under his skin, which I completely understand. It's a tactic.
Yates carried this was left open the first game where Yates should have been sent off for the sheer number of fouls he committed.
Yeah.
Look, let's call it what it was. It was a slight sort of one-inch punch.
But that could, that would often get you sent off. I think.
If you're Christian Romero, he's gone there. Absolutely no question whatsoever. And the referees need to sort that out. I don't want James Maddison to get sent off, but he was lucky to stay on there. And picking and choosing which players you choose to believe are not that kind of player, that's not the way the law should be administered. Having said that, Yates should have got a second yellow card for sitting there making the television sign under the laws, not just me saying that.
They both could have gone effectively.
Had a situation where Maddison would have stayed on and Yates had been sent off for protesting about being fouled. but, you know, Ryan Yates, he brings it on himself somewhat, I think, that lad, I'll be honest with you.
I didn't think they were at 2-1 that Spurs would have still won the game. You know, they've got this resilience about them. They've come from behind a lot, and so...
They have. Yeah. I mean, your luck's going to run out at some point. I mean, they were good goals and they got back into the game and they were a different team second half. But
one of my best friends is a Spurs fan. We were having a chat about the games last night and he said to me, "Oh, but Chelsea have got better players." I said, "You're not serious." And I went through exactly. I went through all the different players. By the time I finished, he went, "Oh, no, perhaps not."
Yes.
Spurs have got much better recruitment.
Recency bias, Paul, to use that expression. Van de Ven's goal is now my favourite Spurs goal ever.
Yeah. You don't see many goals like that, do you?
I tell you what, I thought they hit it so hard, given Vicario's starting position, that if it hit the crossbar, they would have scored. The rebound would have gone over Vicario's head and into the goal.
He really belted it. I mean, he's strong and quick. He's a real combination.
And his levers are huge. That's why he runs so fast. So when he caught it,
about his hamstrings, because he does rely on that pace.
The Murillo shot as well, had it gone in, I mean, he would have out Pele.
That wasn't the halfway line. He was halfway in his own half. And, of course, because luckily for us, there are so many TV cameras, the look on Vicario's face as he turns and realises, I'm not going anywhere near this.
No, it was very unlucky.
He put on his best, hoping for the best face, I think you could call it,
indeed. We move on then to Aston Villa 3, Brentford 3.
Yes, good comeback from Brentford in that one.
Yeah, Sergio Reguilón's best game. I think he looked like the player that played for Sevilla back in the day.
Agent Reguilón there, helping Spurs out.
He did play incredibly well, was very key to them. Obviously, Thomas Frank getting a tune out of him. and it was some fight back, but we had Ollie Watkins saying that they should have done better collectively. And he's got a point, really, with what they're fighting for at the top.
Well, they were 2-0 up. They should. I thought Brentford were done. But they are the Horace Batchelor in for a draw 11 at the moment, Brent.
That's a nice contemporary reference.
Thank you very much. Every game is basically a draw. I mean, I think it was the last three or four. I mean,
if people are still doing the pools, there we are, a little tip from Andy for you.
The draws, Andy, you watch them more than I do with Brentford. I mean, look, they're not as exciting a team as they were last year. We know they've had the disruption of the Tony ban and all the rest of it. But they are tiptoeing away from danger. Is that fair to say?
Oh, yeah, they're going to be fine. It was a pity that we didn't see Watkins and Tony the whole game on the same pitch for comparison purposes.
That was odd. Two players having a row, and there was no attempt to cover their mouths. My lip reading not good enough to work out why he was upset with Nathan Collins and vice versa. But they're having a row.
Collins is quite error-prone, I think.
I mean, this is why... we can't have Sky apologising for... They already apologised for everything the crowd says. Now, those of you who can lip read, I'm very sorry about that. They'll be putting up those sort of black tapes over the players' faces soon, weren't they? So you can't see what they're saying.
I don't know how much swearing was involved. It looked as if, you know, full of frank discussion about somebody's shortcomings.
Tell you what was interesting. You've made the point, Paul, for many, many years that the Premier League clubs don't look in the Championship. They much prefer to look abroad.
Yeah.
And Morgan Rodgers is a great example of that.
Yeah.
I thought he was brilliant against Chelsea, the goal he scored in the 6-1 demolition. And he looks...
I just mentioned this. This seems a reluctance sometimes. You'll have a player like Jarrod Bowen that no one picks up on for ages, and you think, why is nobody buying this fella? You know, he's clearly a very good. And they in the end, somebody. It goes back to sort of Trevor Sinclair all those years ago. Somebody takes that leap of faith, and you think, oh yeah, what a surprise! Andy Robinson, he's really good, isn't he? So they'll spend more time in the Championship and League One than they will maybe at an overseas club, where people seem, for some reason, despite the fact, you know, if they're not playing in this league, they're more willing to take a chance.
Some of it's bias. Some of it is, of course, that English-based players are just much more expensive to buy and pay.
Yeah, now that is probably true. Yeah. And the clubs ask a lot more money in the Championship, maybe sometimes too much for a player, really. Wolves 1, West Ham United 2. The wind-assisted goal straight from the corner by James Ward-Prowse. So we can't quite believe it was his first
ever
one.
Getting away with it a bit, West Ham, aren't they? They were lucky in this game.
I mean, without coming Glenn Hoddle in it, what has Gary O'Neill done the previous life to deserve the refereeing this season? Dear God in heaven, another one, really?
But the worst, I agree with Gary O'Neill. I think that's one of the worst decisions in the history of football. It was made by somebody that just got no understanding of football whatsoever, no understanding of what interfering with play actually is and what it should mean. How on earth was he interfering with Fabianski? There's no way. He was never getting that header. Never.
Honestly, Absolutely right.
I'd be ashamed of myself.
Our old mate Dale Johnson has been talking about why that was chalked off. And in law, whether the goalkeeper's got any chance of getting it does not matter.
Well, the law is completely wrong.
Andy, I know he's a great colleague and friend of the station, all the rest of it. Dale could jump through a wedding ring to prove these VAR.
He's such an apologist.
No, he's not an apologist.
He is.
He's not.
I'm sorry, that is the worst law ever.
He technically tells you why. Forensically tells you why.
It's
another example of people knowing all the facts and none the truth.
Well, there
does
we are.
Interfering with play count? Is that not no longer a part of the law? Is that not in it? Or it just matters that you're offside, that's it? Because otherwise there's something wrong with the law.
Shall I tell you what he said? Do you want to know what he said?
Yeah, let's hear
it. All right, then. Everybody said it was a bad decision. He said, you can argue against the law, says Dow, in his VAR roundup on ESPN. Mm. But he feels Gary's anger is misplaced against the officials, and it's very easy to overturn for the VAR. If a player is stood directly in front of the goalkeeper in the line of vision of the ball, the goal will always be ruled out.
He wasn't in the line of vision of the goal. He wasn't.
Line of vision doesn't only have to mean that goalkeeper Fabianski can't see the ball.
Dear, oh dear. The players, I'd be embarrassed to write that, honestly. I would.
It's stating the facts.
It's ludicrous.
It's not an opinion. It's the facts.
Well, it's ludicrous.
But the pretense that it is definitely in the goalkeeper's line of vision is not a fact.
I guarantee, Dale, that Howard Webb ends up apologising. I guarantee he apologises for that one.
Well, he's probably got a pre-recorded button for Wolves, hasn't he? This week's apology.
it's like
a cartridge.
That's right. Number three.
Well done.
A cartridge.
With the old DJs.
Back to the 70s on the radio. Yeah.
He's got a wax cylinder with an apology on it. Anyway, sorry, Dale. I'm trying to stand your corner here, mate. I know you're only supplying the facts.
He seems like a really clever and good man.
Give us a call,
sometimes,
Dale.
Sometimes you have to say, come on, guy.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Danny Kelly's with us. We'll continue the game-by-game review of the Premier League weekend at Craven Cottage with Fulham 0, Newcastle 1. A rare home defeat for Fulham.
Bit of a smash-and-grab situation,
Bruno
really.
Guimaraes, they had a lot of chances against Fulham and didn't take them. Were dominant very early on, which frustrated Marco Silva, understandably. But a bit of quality ultimately did for them with Guimaraes, a player that I think some Newcastle fans fear may not be there next season because of profit and sustainability.
It's wrong,
and all that,
in my view, but there we go.
Well, he's a very good player, isn't he? I mean, this is an important result for Newcastle. It actually keeps alive their chances of getting into one of the European tournaments. I mean, not least because football predictions are a mug's game, but they now have, with the exception, and I say this and waiting for fate to give me a kick in the pants, Paul, the exception of playing Spurs next weekend at St James's, all their games after that are against teams in the bottom half. They could go on a real tear here and end up sort of in one of the European places, which didn't look very likely a couple of months ago.
No, yeah. I've got that down as well, making a late run for the conference.
They've got some winnable games. That is ultimately could be an undoing for them. But
you know, it's the old story. Fulham started well. They had good chances, but you know, didn't take them. So that's what happens.
Didn't take their chances, but good result. Yeah, and that'll kick off game day on TalkSport next Saturday to 12:30.
Yeah, that'll be a good game.
Newcastle Spurs. Sheffield United 2. Chelsea 2. Andy, I only saw highlights of this. I believe you watched it all unfold. What do you make of it? Want to give us your brief assessment?
Yeah.
Well, please do not swear.
Same old story. You know, as the Spurs in the first half, they didn't take advantage of being 1-0 up and dominating the game. They allowed Sheffield United back into it. And the recruitment is so poor that it comes back to haunt them every week. I mean, they haven't got a goalkeeper between the two of them. I mean, you know, that he started off all right, Petrovic, but that's because he was being compared to Sanchez. But, I mean, how can you be beaten at the near post like that? You know, that is chronic. And then the second goal, you know, most keepers, I think, would have come flying out at Wood, try and make us. He just stood on his
at
line.
At Wood, you mean, sorry, McBurney.
McBurney.
Come from the same cloth.
But, yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
But, I mean, honestly, to concede like that, the way they conceded was just...
But Andy, there's something more now. Up to now, I've agreed with you, and I do agree with you. The recruitment, trying to put fixed, you know, 10 players into a new system with a new manager and all the rest of it. But the players aren't responding. And there's something more going on there now, isn't there? Yeah. I mean, to go to Sheffield...
Well, yeah, it's hard to say that, Danny. They responded the other night against United.
Sure they did. But to go to Sheffield, a team who are out of their depth, you know, honest players, but out of their depth, Chelsea were outshot by six shots to 11 at Sheffield United. I know you said they dominated the game. They weren't hurting Sheffield that much.
Three shots on target in the whole game Chelsea had.
But they had a lot of the ball. They had chances to sew it up. They should have won the game. And 2 points against the bottom two in two games after leading twice is pathetic.
Yeah. We should salute Sheffield United, who put in a decent performance midweek, and that was a big point for them. They're hanging in there. It's almost...
Oh, God. They're one of the worst teams ever to play in the Premier League. They're dreadful.
Well, it's not like you, Andy, because normally you're quite fulsome in your praise of any team that gives Chelsea a game.
Honestly, there's just no words to describe supporting Chelsea this season. They're just a ridiculous team.
You've just come up with it.
And yet, Andy, until this weekend, they still had a mathematical chance of being champions of England. They don't anymore.
No, but, you know, if they'd won those two games, which they should easily have won, they'd be level with West Ham, they'd be challenging for Europe, and, you know, they would have games in hand, and it's just so frustrating. But what can you do?
What can you do? You can move on to Luton Town 2, Bournemouth 1. And, I mean, we saw Colt Morris at the end, like in tears, proving what emotionally they got right into that, really. And they're still fighting down there. And we were talking to Faker others last week before the Arsenal game. They have kind of become everybody's favourite team down the bottom.
Including mine. They should be really... Whatever happens to them, they should be... I mean, of course, we're expecting further news about Everton sometime in the next few hours, aren't we?
Yes, we are expecting some news, but we're keeping our powder dry at the moment.
But even so, whatever happens to Luton, they can be entirely proud of their effort. And people go, oh, no, you've got to get, you know, it's all about staying in the Premier. Well, you know, with the resources they've got, I think they've made a real good fist of this. And Morris, of course, was extra excited because he hadn't scored for quite a long time, having had a very, very good first half to the season. But I can't say more than that. They're playing probably Luton to the absolute limit of their abilities.
Yeah.
And that's all you can really ask of any group of footballers, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah.
It was revenge for the 4-3 defeat, wasn't it?
It was the wind assisted in the eyes of Andoni Iriola. But we move on finally.
He's done a good job, our Alfred Molina.
He certainly has. Everton 1, Burnley 0. Same old problems for Burnley. The Muric mistake, Dar O'Shea's mistake that gets him sent off. If Burnley go back and look at so many points they've lost because of their own making, really. And Everton, I mean, you look at Everton's defensive record. Only Arsenal have kept more clean sheets than Everton.
And that is why, yeah, if you're in trouble, you hire
the whole time. That's Sean
Dyche
special.
Yeah, I know, but you, if you, if, you know, if you're
very bitter, it's a very bitter man today. Have you noticed?
That's all right. They're going to win. They're going to win next week at Chelsea. They're going to come along with a Dyche low block.
It's like some ranting old man in the corner of the pub.
That'll never work as public entertainment, will it? No way. Look, if you're really run out of other ideas and you want to stay in the Premier League, get Sean Dyche, because he will organise a football team to at least defend their goal with a mixture of determination and organisation.
Mm. It'll be a travesty if they go down, though, because then, you know, pitch wise, then much better than a lot of teams. And
well, the other teams below them would say there's a reason for that, isn't it? It's to do with financial irregularities.
Maybe, but I tell you one thing though: if Michael Oliver was the VAR, he would have given that penalty for that challenge on James Garner. Honestly, he would have done it. It was a penalty.
Yeah. I mean, I really couldn't.
But then,
see
of course, the VAR's never going to go against Michael Oliver, so we all know that. So there we go.
Yeah, I mean, where I've praised Sheffield United for being, you know, at least trying their best, and Luton, brilliant. I've never understood from moment one what Burnley are trying to do in this league, and a combination of that plus their own propensity for shooting themselves directly in the foot, and, you know, and O'Shea, I mean, already had to concede the goal from a defensive error, to then compound it by getting yourself sent off for half nothing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And slightly delusional from Vincent Kompany as well. They haven't been the better team in the last few games. They weren't the better team.
No, they have not. And he's just staring into space saying stuff now, isn't he?
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad. And I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Good afternoon, Paul Hawksby, Andy Jacobs here on Talk Sports, and we'll continue reacting to that extra 2 points for Everton. Kieran Maguire from the Price of Football podcast, lecture on football finance at Liverpool University, and I'm sure he's got a few Evertonians in his classes constantly asking him what's going on. We'll try and find out a little bit more about how these tariffs are set, because Everton seem to be hinting that to them, they can't quite work out what's 2 points, what's 4 points, what's 6 points, and what's 10 points. And we've got that whole complication around the appeals process and the timeline of it, and whether teams are going to their final games of the season not knowing whether they're staying up or not based on what happens on the pitch, which is an absolutely nuts situation. But again, I'm sure the Premier League would argue that they can only make these judgments very late in the season once they've seen all the accounts. But anyway, Kieran will clear all that up. I think quite a lot of people, you see, at its own shop window, as it often does, because for some reason it's an early kickoff.
Ooh,
I can't imagine why. The Old Firm Derby, despite the fact there's only one set of fans there, that does make for a very eerie atmosphere, especially when one team are 2-0 up away. Susie McCabe is a Celtic fan, a comedian, podcaster, and she joins us now. Hi, Susie.
How you doing, boys?
Good, thank you. Yeah, I'm sure. Yesterday.
Bit of a roller coaster, as they say.
Yeah, yesterday at quarter to one. You cloud cuckoo land, weren't you? I would have thought.
I tell you what, I would have loved that game of football if I hadn't been so emotionally invested in it.
Yeah. That's the thing. We, as neutrals, we absolutely loved it, but it was brilliant. But yeah, when you've got skin in the game, it's not so much.
Do you know what? That game kind of sums up Celtic's season. And I don't think it was a particularly bad result. I mean, if you'd asked me at 5-12, would you take a draw? I would have totally taken a draw. Because to go to Ibrox at any time, let alone with no fans, and get a draw is a good result. And quarter to one, everything was rosy in the garden. I was having a beer, a bit of Easter egg, leftover Easter egg. Everything was great. And then that second half, I nearly seen my my beer and my Easter egg all over again. But it was, do you know what? It was a great game. And to be fair, that third goal from Rangers was an absolute, I mean, what a strike.
It was.
And it was a game of two halves. And that has been Celtic's season all season. And that's not discrediting Rangers in any way. Celtic went out, played the first half great. Rangers weren't on it. We had the goal in the first 19 seconds, which is like unheard of. And then Celtic played well, and then they just came out the second half, and they've done what Celtic have done this season, where they've managed to not join 2:45s into a full game of football. And in fairness, I said to my wife, Rangers are not going to come back out and play that bad. That is possibly their worst performance since Philip Clement has taken over. There is no way they're going to come out and play that bad again. And they didn't. And Celtic just weren't in the races in the second half.
No, strange.
They won the game twice, though. I mean, I did think at 3-2, personally, I thought they over-celebrated. There was still a fair bit of time left. They thought they'd won it, you know, the way they sort of... Well, Brendan Rodgers led the celebrations, and I thought that was a little bit, you know, presumptuous, because we've all seen in recent weeks what can happen in these games right up to the end.
It wouldn't be like Brendan to be self-assured of himself, though, would it? If there's one thing you can say about Brendan, very humble, very humble.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't have confidence.
It's a shame. I mean, look, we know all the reasons why, but it is a shame that there are no away fans at the Old Firm games because, as I said, it's just... And it piled the pressure on Rangers first half. As I said, you know, when you've got just one set of fans letting you know how terrible you've been, it had the desired effect, of course, because they were much better in the second half. And maybe with the old boos and whistles ringing in their ears, but it does make for a very eerie atmosphere, certainly when you're going 2-0 up.
Listen, I am dead against this. I think it should be full allocations all round, 12,000 each stadium, and you come because it's a spectacle. And people go, oh, you know, it's kind of cultural and stuff like that. And you go, yes, it is. So if that's what it is, celebrate it. And celebrate the differences without the bad songs, and, you know, enjoy it as a sporting spectacle. It's a great rivalry, and it should be enjoyed. And next season, I think they're allowing 5,000 Celtic fans into Ibrox and 6,000 into Celtic Park, which I still don't. It's 5% of the overall allocation. That's why it's two different numbers. But I still don't think that's enough. Like, I mean, I used to sit. When I was much younger, my first season ticket was about 10 rows from the segregation, which was a further 10 rows. Then it was the Rangers fans, so you were very close. And then as I moved in a better seat in the stadium, I mean, it was still there. And do you know what? I've been to Ibrox a few times as an away fan, and it was always like if you got something, it was a bonus, but it was just a great... It's great, do you know? And yeah. I think... If you're a true football fan and you love your team, and I always think there's that thing with Celtic and Rangers fans, like when you take away the kind of madness, when you've got friends who are Rangers fans and you're a Celtic fan, you have that mutual respect for each other that you are what you are, but you both love your teams equally, you know? And I think the kind of not having the fans and piles into the kind of division and all the nasty stuff that we don't like about the game, but it might not be... the greatest league in the world, but it's certainly a great fixture.
Yeah, absolutely.
There were some classic ref moments there, booking Fabio Silva for a dive and then giving the penalty.
Yeah.
And then he made everyone think he'd overrule VAR to allow the second goal, but he was just pointing to
the... I mean, he was on the way down before he even caught him.
It was.
I mean,
it was dubious.
It was nuts. Although Rabbi Matondo scored the goal, if you want to hear him talk you through that equaliser, Susie, he's on with Andy Goldstein and Paul Lynch at 4 o'clock.
You're all right, lads. I'm washing my hair, lads. I'm washing my hair.
You are. You've got
your tour.
Yeah, you've got your tour coming up. Are you? Well, your Edinburgh show, The Merchant of Menace.
Yeah, so I just debuted it at Glasgow. There, I was very fortunate that I got 3 nights in the King's Theatre in Glasgow. So we had like over 4,000 tickets, over 2 days with 3 shows, and it debuted there, and it was really well received. And I actually got a review from the Scotsman, which is, you know, as you boys know, in Edinburgh, a review from the Scotsman's kind of gold dust, you know. So we got a review, and it was 4 stars for a debut. Quite delighted, and yeah. Off to Edinburgh, we are in a bigger room, but in a 250-seater. Oh no! And we've actually got like things like disabled access this year, and we've also managed to try and get the show captioned for a couple of the dates, which I think is really important to try and make it that bit more accessible. You boys know you have been to Edinburgh; it's not the most accessible city, and fringe venues are not the most accessible. But we're trying to kind of make a difference there. And I'm really looking forward to it. I actually won Best New Show at the Leicester Comedy Festival as well in February. So, yeah, chuffed to bits.
It's great that.
Winner of the Sir Billy Connolly Spirit of Glasgow Award, which must be nice too.
That is lovely, yeah. We sound about making it accessible. Ray Bradshaw, man, you know, I mean, Ray has his show signed, doesn't he, really?
Yeah,
he's been doing it because of his parents and stuff. And himself.
Yeah, and he signs himself, and you know, Ray has been very, very kind of vocal about that because of the room I'm in and the way the stage is, because we looked at getting someone in to sign, and Ray was actually telling me the other day, I didn't realise that sign language doesn't actually translate.
No, it doesn't. When he's been in to talk about it, he talked about doing some gigs overseas, and it's like the signing's different and working in the States and stuff. I never knew that. I mean, you know, all language is different. I suppose we should regard that the same, but I thought it was a universal language, Susie.
Yeah, totally. So did I. And then he said, oh, actually what you're captioning might not actually be, you know, something that you would do in sign language. You would use something else, and I had no idea. But because the kind of rooms get a wedge stage, we thought to have two of us on that stage is going to be really, it's going to be really difficult, you know. And obviously comedy as well, as much as what you have your show and you're going to do your show, you kind of want to be a little bit loose as well, don't you? And deal with what's going on in the room at that point in time. But yeah, so we're certainly trying to make a small dent in the accessibility of Edinburgh. That's what we're trying to do.
Good for you.
And finally, you're part of a new podcast as well, Susie. Here Comes the Guillotine.
Yes. Yes. And it's as inappropriate as you would imagine. It's myself, Christopher MacArthur Boyd, and Frankie Boyle. So if you've seen Frankie on tour, Christopher was probably support, just a wee specky guy. And he was also my support on my tour last year as well. And do you know what? A lot of podcasts have a lot of structure and a lot of direction. We don't. We just sit and chat. It sounds like three mates in a pub. And we have those ridiculous conversations that you have when you're sat in a pub with your mates just going, did you know? And then going off on a tangent about something. Yeah.
Nice one. Well, go and check it out wherever you get your podcasts. Here Comes the Guillotine. Assembly George Square Studio, Studio 3, 7:45, 31st of July to the 25th of August. Not the 12th. Everybody has the 12th off. Go and see Susie's show, The Merchant of Menace. Good to talk to you, Susie. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much. Take care, lads. See you later.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. The Talk Sport Clips of the Week.
You want to do the Eclipse of the Week, don't you? But I don't think they're quite as frequent as that. Okay, so these are a box of old mini discs lying in the corner. What are those? Oh, there must be some old clips. They certainly are. So we've dusted them off. And we can't promise gold, but we can promise, hopefully, some pewter. So, of varying quality. Our producer, Jamie, has put them all together. We've not heard them since November, December 2007.
God, that's a long time
so
ago.
Your guess is as good as ours. Where should we kick off, Andy?
We're going to kick off with Mike Parry alongside Andy Townsend reading a text.
I've got one here from a guy called Marsh Rat, and it says, right, I don't know. Marsh Rat, I think it's a pseudonym.
Yeah, I think it probably is. Member of the Rat family. He could be Roland's brother.
Yeah.
Here's a caller talking England managers.
All right, the question is, do you not think that we haven't got the right man for the England job? Because I think that we've had too many yes-no men.
Oh, okay.
Well, make up your mind, which is it?
Too many yes-no men. Of course we certainly have.
This is Alan Brazil struggling with a story about Kaká.
Kaká wants to pay God for his divine football and time becoming an evangelical minister.
Evangelico, I think he was a Brazilian. He played with Kaká
for a little while.
Yeah, good player, Evangelico. This is Graham Beecroft with a question for his guest.
I'm not trying to be particularly negative, Andreas, but one of the subjects which may have been spoken about, you tell me whether it has or it hasn't, but certainly one of the subjects which is spoken about quite a bit when draws for European Championships or indeed the World Cup come up, are the position of the nations in Pot 6, the Liechtensteins, the Maltas, the Luxembourgs, the Andorras, the Faroe Islands, San Marinos of this world. Have you spoken about having a separate competition of those, what you might call, lesser lights around the world, who are never going to win World Cups because they haven't got the population to win the World Cup, so that the very best of them can come forward and so that, therefore, countries don't get an absolute thrashing, which doesn't improve their standard or, indeed, their will to compete, so to speak?
Yeah. No, that has not been debated at all.
Oh, fair enough.
Fair enough. Yeah.
The debate goes on, the fair play to Beaky. They've been saying that recently, but rather long question, rather short answer.
Good
what's
stuff.
Next?
It's back to Porky Parry and Andy Townsend during a competition.
Third question. Which Strictly Come Dancing competitor suffered a rib injury this week?
Oh.
Give you a clue. Spare rib.
I'll give you a clue. It's not easy getting up in the morning with one of these, Mike.
No, it's not.
Oh, Kate Garraway?
I don't know where that came from, really.
What a clue.
Yeah, that's very
scary.
Yeah, rubbish clues, rubbish answer. staying with those two, here's Mike Parry showing off his impeccable music knowledge.
Just don't come.
Remember this one, Mike?
What's that, Andy?
Do you remember this song?
Of course I remember it.
What was it?
Don't Come Home Too Early.
Okay, the clue was in the singing there from Delamitri, but okay. Let's get the weather now with Faker Others.
TalkSport weather with Andrews Heat for Hire. More reliable than the British weather. 0800 211 611. Portable heating delivered nationwide.
Excuse me.
It's very good.
Beautiful hiccup there from Faye.
Beautiful. And speaking of weather, it's back to Mike and Andy talking about that exact topic.
Hey, old Ricky the Roofer will struggle this weather, Mike.
Ricky the Roofer, he certainly will. He's probably got a waterproof hammer or something like that.
Oh, that was a waterproof hammer. They're good people at Tool Station maybe sell those.
Leaky hammers.
I think in a past Saturday job, Mike Parry was sent upstairs for a waterproof hammer, don't you? That and the tartan paint. Let's get the travel news now, shall we?
Okay, well, let's start with delays in London. If you're heading into Soho, we've got chaos, actually. The traffic lights on Shaftesbury Avenue are currently out of accident. Currently out of action at Cambridge Circus. That's causing long delays.
Yeah, well, that sound, I don't think like the look of that avenue.
No.
It was Jarena, wasn't it, all those years ago?
Yeah.
What's next?
It's John Gaunty taking a quick call.
Let's go to Spencer in Edgware. Hiya, Spencer. What do you want to say, big boy?
Hello, Gaunty. How are you?
Fabulous, my friend. What do you want to say?
Nothing much.
Oh, fair enough. Well, thanks for calling. It's £100 worth of Tool Station vouchers. Back to Mike Parry now, remembering a well-known quote.
Right. Remember the famous Elvis Presley quote?
Go on.
Before the Beatles, there was nothing.
Is that what he said?
No, actually, it's the other way around. Sorry, John Lennon said that's right. I've just remembered.
Fantastic. There's no better, marvellous. Well done, Mike.
So sure of himself. And staying with Porky in his memory, here he is talking Spanish football.
They are another conundrum at international level. They never quite get it together, do they, up there, in the competitive sense? They don't. If you look at their record, like Spain,
yes,
the best they've ever done They won it in 64.
That's the best shot we've ever done.
Best I've ever done is win it. Okay. Here's Adrian Durham. That's Adrian Durham taking a call.
Pete in Bexley, you're on Talk Sport, Pete.
Hello. I forgot your bloody name.
Tremendous.
Make him feel special, why don't you?
Good old Adrian, sounding as good now as he does now.
Doesn't sound any different.
Yeah, exactly the
couldn't
same.
Couldn't say the same thing about us, or indeed Alan, based on that earlier clip.
No, you definitely couldn't say about Alan.
So, what's next?
It's Alan Brazil and Ronnie Irani discussing their favourite Bond villains.
Go on then, who was yours?
Yeah, I quite liked three of the older ladies. I thought
they
were pretty good. Yeah, Pussy Galore was good. I enjoyed
what was her name? What was her name?
I can't remember her name.
Honor Blackman.
Was it?
Yeah. She'd be about 92 now.
Hale Berry. Met her in Madrid.
Oh, I hope you didn't call her Hale. Member of the Roman Legion. And finally, we end as we began with Mr. Mike Parry. Here he is talking England.
Can the FA find a singer who'll get onto the centre spot an hour before the game on Wednesday night and lead us in a chorus of Three Lines in My Shirt?
Three Lines in My Shirt. There we are. That's all you need to know.
That's
so there we
shirt.
Are. We'll dust off a few more clips, Pewter, for you next week. We are going to be talking Mo Salah very shortly and getting the very latest on this potential move to Saudi. Nothing cut and dried, as you'll discover. There is some good news on the horizon, potentially Liverpool fans. We'll tell you more about that in a moment. But we've not had an opportunity yet to pay tribute to Joe Kinnear. Yeah. And it was quite poignant, because I was at the Tottenham Forest game yesterday, and one of the guys who sits in front of us, Jeff, just said, it's funny, he says, Joe Kinnear's died. And it struck me that the first ever game I went to at Tottenham when I was about 7 years old was Tottenham versus Forest, and Joe played in that game. Joe was playing right back for Tottenham, and in my very formative years of watching Spurs, he was a fixture in that team and a fantastic player.
Oh, a tremendous player.
A successful period for Tottenham, and went on and had a fantastic career in management. But Andy and I were lucky enough to get to know him a bit in later years when he played cricket for the Bunburys and would turn out in the team that we turned out.
He was absolutely regular, and usually every week.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a really lovely bloke and he loved to talk football. And we both remember this his first ever game for the Bunburys.
It's an abiding memory of Joe. We played at Regent's Park, what was called the Hub there. Don't you remember? And David English, God bless his soul, used to bring in lots of like young Surrey and Middlesex bowlers to play.
Yeah, it was quite good opposition, if I remember
right. There was some good... Mike Gatting was playing for the other team. So there were some very good sort of county players, possibly Mark Rampakash and others. And this young lad came in off his full run, bowled really quickly. And whoever was batting, it was a pro as well, didn't quite get hold of it and got a top edge. But a top edge that was carrying to the boundary.
Flew to the boundary.
It was going to be six. And Joe was almost at like fine / long stop. And I don't know how he did it. Suddenly, we just saw him dive.
I was near him.
I was miles away from him, but I saw it from a distance. You saw it from close up.
It's one of the best sketches I've ever seen in my life. And you just realise... Of course, he's a sportsman. He's got a great hand-eye coordination.
He probably would have been 60-odd then, Joe.
Yeah.
It was quite amazing.
Yeah, and Nick Ford from the Bunbury sent me a lovely photo of him and David English together.
Oh,
really
that is
nice.
A cracker,
yeah. Smashing.
And it was lovely. And he was a lovely guy. And as you said, always happy to talk football. And it was a real sad news yesterday that Joe had passed away.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
That's how it unfolded this afternoon. I'll be here with Perry Groves tomorrow, building up to a massive night of Champions League football. We've got Kai Widrington coming in from Strictly, former Saints youth player. Actor Stephen Mangan, big Tottenham fan. Rupert Bell and Lizzie Kelly will be here, build up to Aintree. Blimey, busy show. Gary Naismith joining us. Stenhouse Muir manager, talking a bit of Everton and more, and lots more besides all to come in the show tomorrow. I do hope you can join us. Andy's back on Wednesday.
I am.
If you can't make the show tomorrow, the podcast is always available around 4. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. Hear the guys every weekday between 1 and 4 p.m. on TalkSport.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.